Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello and welcome. I'm Steven, and you're listening to Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. I am a tarot reader and astrologer, and you can find me over at PsychicAccess.com. But tonight, I have with me, as always, three of my co-hosts. We'll start with Maureen. How are you this evening, Maureen?
I'm doing quite well, thank you, Steven. I'm looking forward to your show.
Oh, so am I. We had Christopher Warnock with us here tonight. We're going to talk about Renaissance mysticism and how it applies to modern life. So we're all very excited about that. But before we get into that, tell us what you do over at Psychic Access.
Well, I am an empath, intuitive advisor, a tarologist. However, I utilize tarot as my main tool for receiving my impressions and so on. But because I'm an empath, I make for a good reader, but it can be very difficult for me to. So I use a tarot to kind of keep me focused. And I adore my work. I love my work. It's overwhelming, but it's something I must do. And I can be seen at PsychicAccess.com as well.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thanks for being here. We also have with us tonight Sadia. How are you doing tonight, Sadia?
I'm great. How are you doing, Steven?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Can you share with us what you do over at PsychicAccess.com?
Certainly. I am an empath, I'm intuitive, and I'm a medium. So I communicate with people's guides and loved ones. And I'm able to tap into the Akashic Records, so I can do past life readings as well.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, just to remind everybody, they can find Sadia over at PsychicAccess.com. Thank you for being here with us tonight. Okay, and finally, we have Steve. Last but definitely not least, Steve. How are you doing this evening, Steve?
I'm very well, thank you, Steve. And looking forward to the show.
Ah, so as am I. Christopher Warnock, you know, isn't just an astrological magician. He's also a practicing attorney and quite the scholar. So tonight's show should be very interesting. But before Chris joins us, why don't you tell us what you do over at PsychicAccess.com?
Well, I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer.
Oh, how nice. As I do, you also practice astrology as well. One of the things I love the most is talking about astrology with you, and I'm hoping that tonight you're going to especially enjoy the show, because Christopher Warnock is, in my opinion, a luminary in the world of astrology, magic, and hermetic mysticism. This towering intellect is not only a man whose books that I've read in order to advance my knowledge of astrology. He's also...
This is Doug with Psychic Access Talk Radio. Can you hear me?
Steven, keep going.
Yeah.
It's okay. They can't hear it, Steven. Go on.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Trying to get Chris on the line right now, actually. Now, as I was saying, Christopher Warnock has actually filed no fewer than 16 petitions of ad certiorari with the United States Supreme Court. And he's a member in good standing with the bar of the Supreme Court of Iowa. So his credentials are impeccable. And, I tell you what, I'm very thrilled to have him here with us tonight, and as soon as he gets here, we are actually going to talk all about mysticism and spirituality in the Renaissance era and how it applies to the modern day. And I do believe Mr. Warnock is with us now. Mr. Warnock, are you there?
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Oh, how nice. How nice. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We have so much to get into tonight, and I don't want to waste a single second. Well, I have a lot of people, they ask me, you know, what can traditional astrology do for me? You know, my problems are modern and complex. What would you say to somebody who asks you that question?
Oh, yeah, they had the same problems then as they do now. Everyone wants to know about love. That's the biggest question I get, right? And then they ask about money. And then they have a variety of other questions. But, you know, people just don't really change. You know, we've got the same problems then as now. And so, you know, someone might be asking about, actually, I'm not very good at lost items. They lost their car keys, but I don't like to do lost item worries. I'm not very good at those. But love questions, hey, I get a lot of those questions. And just like William Lilly, who is a very famous horary astrologer, we have his workbooks, and there's page after page of love questions, and that's exactly what I get. So, you know, typically I had people asking me about love, and they say, you know, very typically they've got someone they're interested in, what's going to happen with this relationship? And so what I do is, traditional astrology is very focused on practical, concrete results. So the technique I love is called horary astrology, where you look at the time of the asking of the chart, or actually when I receive and understand it, but it's the time of the chart rather than a birth chart, and then that gives us the answer. So if someone comes to me and says, you know, Chris, I've just met this wonderful person, will I marry them, or will I have a committed relationship with them? I take it, I look at the heavens at that moment, and then I can judge the results from that. And so that's real useful. That's real useful information. I can predict the future, not for everything in all respects, but if you can ask a yes or no question, right, that has concrete results, then I can give the answer to that question pretty accurately. So I think that's pretty useful. And so, I really think, you know, we tend to think, oh, we've got TVs and we've got internet and everything. But in fact, this is a methodology that's been proven, you know, over basically about 1,000 years of practice. And so that's one of the reasons that it's so accurate and so precise. So that's a bit of, I'm going to give you a lot of long answers.
Well, that's fine. That's what you're here for. I'm certainly hoping to hear him. And I got to say, Warnock's Horary Casebook is a foundational text for my efforts to understand Horary. You can definitely find that at renaissanceastrology.com, along with a variety of Mr. Warnock's other writings. Now, I'd actually one question. I'm curious. The traditional astrologers, they had a much different science than we did, and you're a modern intellectual. How did you deal with the fact that they, for instance, thought that the sun revolved around the earth and things that we now know are false?
Well, I'm not a modern intellectual anymore.
Okay.
I'm traditional. I mean, here's the thing, okay? You know, one of the things I really emphasize with my students, and in fact, we start all my full courses out. If you want to study with me, you know, as a full student, the first thing we start out with is something called worldview. And worldview is, it's not just our philosophy about the world, it's our unconscious assumptions, it's our whole conditioning and what we've been brought up to believe and how we've been taught to see the world. And so there's a tendency to say, well, reality is reality. But we all have a very specific view of reality that's very much coming from our culture and what we've been trained to see. And so the modern worldview is based ultimately on a view that nothing exists except matter and energy. And usually when people say spirituality, what they mean is a fancy kind of psychology. And what psychology is from your mind, and what's your mind? It's your brain thinking. It must be, because obviously nothing exists except matter and energy. And if people think about spiritual things as some kind of energy, it's like magnetism or something, and that's, it sort of gets in a loop with that. Traditional, now before what they call, I always say the quote Enlightenment, before about 1700, and in fact in every traditional society in the world, so our society is alone really in thinking that, they saw the spiritual as something that really existed. Now, not physically, it doesn't physically exist, but, you know, and let me just give you an example, a way to kind of wrap your head around it.
Okay.
Essentially, we've got, you know, there's no other physical place other than where we are right now. You know, the universe, that's all there is physically. But if we think about that, there's more to it than just matter and energy. And the example I'm going to give you is if you think about a savanna, you know, like it's, say, in Africa, before there's even any life on it, You've got a certain amount of water, a certain amount of light, a certain amount of nutrients. That can support, let's say, 1,000,000 pounds of vegetation. Okay? And we know that because we know how much light there is, we know how much water there is, how much sunlight there is. And that's the carrying capacity of that land. And then with that 1,000,000 pounds of vegetation, that can support 100,000 pounds of herbivore. And so you can have antelopes or whatever. Before there's even anything there, we know there's only going to be that many herbivores. Then you got 1,000 pounds of carnivore. So all these complex ecological niches, all these complex interactions are built in there before there's even anything happening. And that's a good way to think about the spiritual, because it's the underlying relationships that are built in to the cosmos. And so, you know, that getting your kind of head around that, it takes a long time. It took me about 10 years to kind of step out of the modern way of thinking and step into the traditional way of thinking. And so by worldviews, you can almost put on or put off like a hat, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you put that traditional worldview on where magic is possible, where the spiritual exists, and all of a sudden you can do magic and you can work with the spiritual realm. And so if you think like a modern person, right, you're going to have trouble. Mm-hmm. Now, the sun going around the earth. Okay, that's an interesting one. So, you know, that's true if you go out into space. That's exactly what you're going to observe. From the standpoint of Earth, though, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And, I mean, if you try to run your life in such a way that the sun doesn't rise in the east or set in the west, that's kind of a messed up life. You're going to be getting up in the middle of the night, you know? Right. That's reality from this particular standpoint, okay? And if you think about celestial navigation, like if you're out in a ship before we had, tracking and everything like that, before we have all the satellites, then you would have used what's called geocentric astronomy, which, again, the Earth is stand still for that, and the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, and everything revolves around it. It's perfectly accurate, again, for surveying. And so it's a matter of perspective, you know. And the Earth going around the sun, actually, sometimes, you know, those theories are out there. The other one that I hear a lot is, oh, they just thought the world was flat. Nobody from about 400 BC who was educated to the present ever thought the world was flat. That's a myth that's been invented. We like to think we're really advanced. And we do have some technology, but certainly in a spiritual way, we're way, way far behind, you know, our ancestors. They were far more advanced than we were spiritually in their knowledge. And so the thing is, it is that, you know, the type of astronomy that I use, and, you know, if you go to astronomers, they grind their teeth, but they'll admit, yes, it's perfectly accurate in terms of if you look up in the sky, that's what you'd see. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're working at. It's just the heliocentric, the sun moving around the Earth. I mean, again, even NASA, when they sent when they send satellites to Mars or whatever, they're using geocentric astronomy because it works for that methodology. And none of these is absolute truth. Again, it depends on what your perspective, what you're going for. And so since we're looking at cycles and the heavens give us a very regular cycle, it works. Now, you could do a heliocentric astronomy. I mean, there are people that do that. It's relatively new. The nice thing about the astronomy that we use is it's, like I said, 1,000 years old. We've had a lot of time to work with it. And so I guess the final thing I'd say about that is if it's like saying, look, I went to the movies and I saw this newsreel and someone says, oh, no, that's all fake. Because, you know, in fact, when you see a movie, it's just still pictures. So that was all an illusion. You know, it's not really the truth. You say, well, that's true, but that doesn't mean that the news that I saw on that isn't correct. You're correct that, yeah, that's how it works. But that's what I saw. It looks like a movie. It gives me perfectly accurate information for my purposes. So that's what I'd say about the style of the astronomy. And so a lot of that is people want to believe that this doesn't work, and they're looking for excuses for it. Because ultimately, like I said, let's get back to worldview. Astrology is a spiritual science. It doesn't work through sunspots or magnetism or anything like that. It works through the underlying spiritual relationship of all things. And so if there's no spiritual realm, if there's no spiritual reality, then obviously it can't work. And everything else is just kind of double talk. And I hear a lot of double talk arguments against astrology. The real argument that people should be making is, look, there's no spiritual anything. But that's a little bit of a problem because that means there's no God, you know, and that wipes everything else out. So a few, you know, atheists are willing to make that argument. And that's why they get so upset, because everyone pretty much operates off those unconscious assumptions. And yet they turn around and say, well, you know, obviously, it's funny how people are a little schizophrenic about it. So they'll assume that, yeah, it's matter and energy unconsciously, and then they'll say, oh, I'm a spiritual person, I believe in God. And it's kind of contradictory. So that's like one of the reasons I like traditional astrology is based on traditional philosophy. And traditional philosophy, there wasn't an argument between the scientists and the theologians. Before 1700, everybody got along because the Western scheme of knowledge included the spiritual. They threw it out about 1700. And so, you know, again, it's complicated. It's hard to wrap your head around it, but that's because there's been a real revolution in how people see the world. And that doesn't mean we're better now. I mean, some ways we've got high tech, we got internet and everything, but like I said, in other ways we've actually fallen behind spiritually. So that's one of the things I've been interested in doing is going back and saying, okay, what did our ancestors know that we don't? And let's bring that back into popularity. So that's one of the things I've been trying to do with traditional astrology and astrological magic, is to try to revive it. And we tend to think of wisdom from the East, but we have a lot of wisdom in our own tradition in the West. It's just been lost. And so what we're doing is, a lot of people are involved in this now in the past 20, 30, 40 years to help revive that lost knowledge. Well, another long answer to a short question.
well, it's very interesting that you brought that up, because a lot of the modern astrology, psychological astrology, it has no remedial ability. In other words, it has no access to remedies, nothing to prescribe. But it seems to me that the sort of astrology that you practice, the more traditional or ancient type of astrology, it does have prescriptions that you can make, remedial measures that you can actually make based off the chart to get some relief for whatever's ailing the person.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, there's certainly the, you know, as you were saying that, you know, it's interesting because I have a lot of respect for modern astrology as a method. If you look at someone's birth chart and you consider that as a map of their psyche, of their psychology, it's quite accurate. In fact, that's one of my favorite things to do in the natal chart. I have almost a modern approach in some ways to not 100%, but I do a lot. I like to do psychological astrology. And, you know, really, knowledge, particularly self-knowledge, is the ultimate remedy, okay? Because if you don't know yourself, if you don't know who you are, and you don't know what your desires and your emotions and your drives are, you're really not going to be able to do anything. And ultimately, the solution, the real solution to your problem, starts with that self-knowledge. Because if you say, you know, I am lacking something and I've got to go out and get it. If I only could be rich, then I'd be happy. You know, you look at rich people, they say, I think it's, I don't know, there's different numbers, 50,000, 70,000, and above that, they're not happier. So that's a sort of a spiritual approach. So that's ultimately what I would say, is that if you're running and running and running and running and you're dissatisfied with your life as it is, and you're convinced that if you just got more stuff or things or a person, you know, a soulmate or something, that you would be happy, ultimately you're going to find you're not happy. Now, that being said, you know, it certainly is helpful to have money. It certainly is great to have a relationship. I'm happily married, which I can say. And so, yes, you can get these tangible benefits. Now, you know, in some ways, though, if you want to make a lot of money, you should become a stockbroker. To use a spiritual means to get a material end is not always the most efficient way to do it. And again, though, I'll say, here I am, I'm a professional astrologer. I mean, even though I'm in the bar, even though I'm a lawyer, I don't really make much money doing it. That's my hobby. I say that's my hobby. Right. I do it for fun, you know, to help people. But the astrology has come through, I think, at least a significant amount from the amount of the astrological magic that I've been doing. And so for me, it's a spiritual practice. But I do believe that a lot of these benefits have flown through it. So let's just talk about that. So, okay, so if you were to say, okay, I'm interested in love, you know, you'd say, okay, well, what astrological factor, what planet is appropriate for love? Well, you know, Venus really is the planet of love. So what we would do then is take a look at your chart, and we could say, well, you know, Venus is afflicted. Now, again, in traditional astrology, we can look at where the planets are placed in the zodiac as they move orbit around the Earth, and we can and see whether they're everywhere from being very, very strong to very, very afflicted and everything in between. And so we can get a very precise take on that. So we can look at Venus and so you can say, well, you know, Venus is a little weak in your chart, so a Venus talisman might be a good thing to help you as far as love. And so a Venus talisman, what we would do to make a Venus talisman, now we typically will look out, right now, for example, I'm looking out for the rest of 2014 into 2015 to find good dates to make talismans. And so, you know, it might only be, you know, typically the time span for making a talisman is something from between half an hour to an hour, and it might not reoccur for a whole year. We have talismans we can never make again because the timing will never recur again. So we have to get all sorts of different factors that we line up, and we want to find the time that is strongest for Venus. For example, when Venus is in her sign, Taurus or sign Libra, when she's exalted in Pisces, when she's rising on the horizon or directly overhead, Venus hour. There's a lot of factors we look at, and that's taken me, you know, again, I've been doing this for 15 years. It's complicated. And so then at that time, we want to make the talisman and invoke the spirit of Venus. And so we in a sense, charge it with that Venus energy. Then if you get that talisman, then that's got the Venus energy or the Venus spirit, and that can help you. Now, okay, what kind of effects would you get from a Venus talisman? It really varies. People say, what's going to happen, Chris? I say, look, I don't know. It really varies for each person. I've had people that got an effect from a talisman before they even received it. They ordered it and haven't even got it yet. I had people that got it the day they got it. I've had people that have said, oh, it took a couple months. And I certainly had people that have said they got no effects at all. Those are typically the people that have too high expectations. They were expecting something like Harry Potter, or they were expecting to win the lottery the next day.
Right.
And that's not going to happen. People say lottery to me, I say don't buy a talisman. Because that's, you know, you can increase your odds 100 times, you're still not going to win the lottery. You know? And that's not realistic. But say a Venus talisman, a love talisman. Typical effects, people that you are interested in, like an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend, if you haven't talked to for a while, all of a sudden start calling you up. You get these sort of ringing the psychic bell. When you go out and you socialize, you feel more comfortable, you feel more social. People you're interested in or more attracted to, they interact with you. Now, a couple times I have had this. People have gone back and said, hey, you know, this is maybe two or three times in 10 years, said, hey, I bought that talisman and I got married or I had a committed relationship. So again, I couldn't guarantee, oh, yeah, you're definitely going to have a relationship. Now, the other thing is you got to take practical efforts. If you got a Venus talisman and you stayed in your apartment all day long and you didn't go out, someone's not going to show up on your doorstep, you know? You get a wealth talisman and you make no effort, whatever, to you know, for example, have a small business or, you know, try to make money in a practical way, you need a way for that to manifest. I mean, the spiritual manifest through material effects. You're not going to have bags of gold materializing out of nowhere. Again, it's not like, this is real. It really works. But that means it's not like the movies. You know? And right. So, because if it did, I mean, with the lottery, think about that. People ask me about lottery talismans. I'm like, yeah, if I could make a lottery talisman, I'd make one talisman, make it for myself, and then I retire. Why would I want to sell you a lottery talisman? Right?
That makes
sense.
It's like
stock market. It's like with stock market. You pick stock market. I mean, I'm no good at picking stock market. And I see these systems. I'm like, if it really worked, why would they sell it?
Right.
You know? But people want to believe, and it's really easy to tell people stuff like that. And then, again, with talismans, I have to be careful because people call me up and they say, oh, I don't have any money to pay the rent. I'm in desperate shape. I need a talisman. I say, don't buy a talisman. I've refused to sell people talismans in that sort of circumstance because that's not realistic. You know? You need to be able to put the time and energy and effort into it. You need a way for it to manifest. And it does. You can do some amazing stuff with talismans. So that's been very exciting for me because that's an area that I basically have revived single-handedly. Nobody else was practicing traditional astrological magic. And, you know, I've really been privileged to be involved with it. And we've done some translations, and I've got the website, and we've done a tremendous number of – I have a friend who's my jeweler who's also a magician, a mage. And so we work together to make the talismans. I pick the times that he actually does the casting. He's in Boulder, Colorado. And so that's been very exciting. And we actually have two talismans that are now in the permanent collection of the British Museum. The British Museum in London has one of the most amazing collections of magical artifacts. And so he was talking to a curator doing some research, and they got very interested in our talismans and actually asked us if we would donate some, and we did. And so now if you look at our website, you can see that we have two talismans that were made. They're actually planetary table talismans that he cast and I picked the time for that are now in the British Museum's collection. So I'm quite proud of that, as you know, showing that we really have the highest level of authenticity, you know, and really effort that we put into making our talismans.
not only is it not only do you display the highest level of authenticity, but also the highest level of scholarship as well. I should point out that you yourself, along with John Michael Greer, pretty much presented a long-lost magical grimoire, if I'm not mistaken, to the world, The Picatrix. And this was a feat of scholarship. This is a magical text, a text on magic. And I just want to let everyone know that what we're talking about here is electional astrology, choosing the right time for things, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Mr. Warnock?
Yeah, basically what happened was I actually studied horary with a teacher. And horary astrology, again, you look at a chart and you can read what's going to happen from the chart, the time in question. Electional is kind of the flip side of that, the mirror of it, because if you pick a time, for example, if you pick a time that's a yes, right, you go yes answer, then that would be a good time to actually do it. You know, if someone came to you and said, well, I marry this person, and the chart said, yes, you would, there's lots of positive indications, well, then that timing would be a good time to pick to choose to get married. And so I was able to learn electional astrology on my own. And then in order to do the talismans, again, you must use electional astrology. That's choice, like a political election. We use the word nowadays. It means a choice in politics. And that's what we do use for astrological magic. You add in, though, the magic. It's a funny combination because astrologers are a little nervous about magic. And magicians are funny because they don't want to be wait around for a particular time. They just want to do it whenever they want. So it's by doing astrological magic, you do this kind of a crossover. It's a hybrid. And you have to be willing to exert your will and be willing to do magic, but you have to wait till the appropriate time. And so it's an interesting combination. It's very hermetic. You know, Hermes Trismegistus, the great great Hermes, he loves contradictions. He loves paradoxes. And so that's one of the things I'm really quite taken with. I always have loved paradox and loved, you know, mysteries like that. But, yeah, the Picatrix was interesting. I was introduced to it by my teacher, Robert Zoller. And it was only in Latin. And I said, well, where's the translation? He said, oh, well, you know, don't worry about that. So 12 years later, you know, it took me 12 years to get it translated. And the Latin I know. I don't know a lot of Latin, but the Latin I can use now, I can read sort of Latin text with magic. You know, I learned from working with Picatrix. So John Michael Greer is quite the accomplished magician. He's the head of the Ancient Order of Druids in America. He's the Archdruid. But he's quite a well-known esoteric author and quite a good Latinist. And so he translated about 75 or 80% of it. But what I really focused on was the astrological portions. And that was the key because it's highly technical. And so you have to understand astrological magic and traditional astrology in order to be able to do it. So again, that was quite, you know, and it's interesting. It's really interesting. Today, it's on Amazon. And they have this weird pricing algorithm that jumps all over the place. They discount it. So right now, it's almost like it's set up for this interview. It's 48% off at Amazon. I know, it's incredible. They're losing money. And so instead of I think normally it's about $32 right today, you know, today, right at the moment, it's $20 for a copy of Picatrix on Amazon. So you can just, if you're interested, scoot over to Amazon and you can search Picatrix or my name, Christopher Warnock, Warnock, and you can come up with that. But it's an amazing deal. I mean, it's almost 50% off, which is quite unusual. And it shot us up to, like, today I was, like, 7,000th on this Amazon sales ranking. So that was, like, the highest. I don't think I've ever been that high on Amazon. It usually bounces around about 50,000 or so, which is still pretty good. I think we probably sell 30 or 40 copies a month, which is pretty amazing for a 1,000-year-old astrological grimoire. But it's actually fairly well-known in the magical community, and people do like to buy. Now, the thing we're working on right now is I have another student of mine named Eric Perdue, and he's doing a modern translation of Agrippa's three books of occult philosophy. And that is available in a 17th century English translation, but it's kind of hard to read because of the English is a little odd. And there was a mistake made in the translation. And so hopefully he's going to come out with that. I'm really looking forward to seeing that because that's a really, really important magical text too. And what's happening is, again, in the past 20, 30 years, all of this secret knowledge has kind of come forth. You know, things that have been hidden for a long time have come forth. And so all of a sudden we're having this available to us in English translation. We can read it. We can work with it. And it's a really exciting time to be working with astrology, magic, and in fact, any kind of esoteric, you know, thing is just exploding You know, and with internet in particular, I mean, people are interested and open, and then it's easily accessible through internet. So it's a wonderful time to be interested in, you know, astrology, magic, and any and sort of spiritual esoteric thing.
Oh, yeah, it's almost like a modern renaissance, a modern golden age.
It is.
Since I have you here, I've been wanting to ask you this myself. You've written a book about the lunar mansions, and I know using the lunar mansions, that's important in your work. They remind, and please correct me if I'm wrong, they remind me an awful lot of the nakshatra system that the Vedists use.
Well, it is exactly the same. I mean, the difference is this, is that the moon takes 27.5 days to orbit the Earth. So what the mansions are, you know, the sun orbits the Earth, or the Earth orbits the sun, however you want to say it. From our standpoint, the sun's going around us. It takes a year, okay? The orbit of the sun around the Earth is a year. So the sun moves through the zodiac. So what the mansions are is a lunar zodiac. But instead of taking a year, it takes about a month. Because that's where the month comes from. It's the orbit of the moon around the Earth. And so in the Vedic system, there's 27 nakshatras, which makes sense because it's 27.5 days. And in the Arabic system that we use in the West, there's 28, which again makes sense because it's 27 and change. And so I think part of the reason the Arabs liked the 28 is because there's 28 letters of the Arabic alphabet. And so they associate each letter of the alphabet with a mansion. And they did a lot of, the Arab magicians were famous for doing all sorts of Arabic, you know, language magic. They did all sorts of talismans with Arabic written on it, or, you know, the name of Allah and things like that. And, you know, that's quite, I don't read Arabic, unfortunately, but, you know, that's something that's kind of exciting. And so the mansions are really interesting. You know, there's a couple mansions that every month when the moon goes in, for example, the third mansion, the seventh mansion, both of those are for all good things. And so every month when the moon goes into the third mansion, I do a invocation of the spirits of the third mansion, and the same thing with the seventh mansion. And it's interesting, I've had situations where the biggest day of business I had all month was, you know, right around like the day of or day after, or the, you know, doing the third mansion ritual or the seventh mansion. And I continuously have been doing these rituals once a month, you know, for years now. And again, that builds up a very close connection with the spirits of those mansions. And it increases, you know, the effect. And it certainly, like I said, has brought a real, you know, I'm doing well. You know, like I said, I'm an astrologer, and yet I managed to have a nice little middle class existence. So, you know, I certainly, that's a testament to, you know, I think the power of astrological magic. But mansions are mostly used for talismans. I mean, they're not really used in natal astrology. They're not used for predictive purposes. They're mostly used for talismans, for magical purposes. And, you know, like, for example, for the third and seventh mansion, those are both mansions of wealth or for things. You like to have the moon waxing, you know, because it's for increase. And so and then you would also maybe want to have the moon rising or directly overhead, which is culminating, and then not afflicted. And so that's kind of how you would go about choosing a good time to make a lunar mansion talisman. And each of them has an image prescribed for it. For example, the third mansion is interesting. It's a woman with, it's almost like a yoga pose with her right hand raised over her head. The seventh mansion I like very much is a man praying. And they also have different kinds of incense that you're supposed to. Now, I have a very heavy Zen Buddhist practice, so I use this sort of Japanese stick incense for everything. And I end up using white candles for my ritual because I buy candles by the case. In fact, the other day I had seven candles going. I had seven different rituals going on, and so I tend to use white candles for that. The most important thing that I sort of emphasize with the ritual is be positive. You know, I only do positive magic. I only want to deal with angelic spirits. And so I use incense and use candles just as a sort of form of respect. And that's very traditional. Even in Zen, it's interesting, in the Zen ritual, they do the same thing. They'll, you know, for example, when you get presented with, like if you become a priest, they give you your robes. They take the robes and they move them back and forth over the incense, just like we would do with the talisman. It's just amazing how these commonalities throughout all the spiritual practice, you know. And that's something that we have, again, like I was talking about, we've lost. I mean, we had this traditional view of reality. We had to open to the spiritual. The spiritual is moving through our lives in many ways. And now we've lost that. And so that's one of the things that's really kind of exciting about astrological magic and talismans is, yes, you can get stuff for yourself, and yes, you can get, you know, material benefits, but ultimately it can be a spiritual path. It opens us up to this bigger reality that includes the spiritual. And I think that's, again, one of the more exciting things about it. And it certainly has become a spiritual practice for me as well.
Yeah, I was surprised at the richness of the spiritual dimension of this very practical astrology. I tell you what, we got to take a commercial right now, Mr. Warnock, but when we get back, I'd like to talk to you about what sorts of spirits are ruling over these times. We'll be right back in one moment.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
And welcome back to Psychic Viewpoint. I am here with Christopher Warnock, and just wanted to remind you that you can find him at renaissanceastrology.com, where you can find software, CDs, books, courses, a whole lot more. Chris, welcome back. We were just
about to talk.
I would like to ask you a few questions about some of that spiritual astrology. It seems like I read somewhere Robert Zoller mentioned a spirit of the times, and I was wondering if I've always been curious about the spirit of the times, and I was wondering if we were operating under any particular spirit in our modern times. I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Robert in his course has very interesting, in fact, I think it's a spiritual astrology chapter. He has a very interesting discussion of that. And that, you know, the German for that is Zeitgeist, you know, which is kind of used as a metaphor. You know, the example he uses is, you know, like 1960, the 60s, which actually didn't really get going until like 1965, you know. And then if you look at 1968, I mean, there's a revolution in everywhere. You know, you think of like 68, like there's in Paris, there was a huge revolt. You know, there was problems in Mexico City. They had this massacre of students. You have the Prague in 1968, Prague Spring in 1968. You know, the protests that's going on in the United States. I mean, absolutely incredible. And you know, there really did all of a sudden it seemed like, wow, this changed. And that, you know, that has been pervasive. I mean, if you look at me, I'm kind of this hippie thing. I'm still kind of doing that to a certain extent. I mean, that was very pervasive. But, you know, by 1970, Altamont, it was over, you know, and people could tell that. So I guess for me right now, I don't have access. Now, sometimes people will do these rituals and they'll say, oh, I talked to the spirit, and you know, I saw them and all that. And, you know, that's even taken somehow as like a test. If you don't have physical manifestation, it's not real. That's a kind of an odd test for a spiritual thing to act to insist it to be material. You know, the spirits I'm dealing with are basically the angels and archangels of the planets and the celestial, you know, the like stars and things like that that I'm dealing with. And even then, I'm not having conversations with them. I don't have that kind of direct communication. So I do not have access to, like, for example, in the Bible, it talks about each country having an archangel. For example, when Moses, remember, was cursing the Egyptians and said all the different, like, the rain of frogs and everything, they had to get the archangel of Egypt to sort of back off and stop protecting Egypt, you know? And I feel like the archangel of America, there's, like, an archangel and a demon. The archangel of America looks like the Statue of Liberty, you know? Give me your tire, your puddled masses. The demon of America looks like, it's sort of like an eagle-headed thing, you know, with, like, armor all over and, like, claws and blood in the claws and stuff. I mean, because there's a dark side to America, you know. Yeah. There's an imperial side to America, as well as there's a really positive side to it, too. And that's true of all countries. They all have, like, a light side and a shadow side. but I'm not in touch with them directly. I mean, I know that the world is a battleground between good and evil, you know, and that people, they think they're acting in their own interest, and in fact, they're pawns in a way in the struggle, as well as maybe having their own stuff going on. But I don't have direct access to that. I mean, right now, you know, it's interesting. You know, we're living in a time when, you know, the Cold War ended, and that's sort of left a gap. I mean, who's the enemy? You know, is Putin, is Russia going to come back and be the enemy again? I mean, drugs are casting around for that. You know, terrorism, looking for an enemy. And we're living in a time where, you know, basically this idea that the economy was going to get better and better and better every year and your kids were guaranteed to have a better life than you, that's over. You know, people now, if they're unemployed, they can be permanently unemployed, you know. And if you're a tech person, if you're an internet person like me, I mean, I'm doing great because I don't have a job, you know. I'm not dependent on that. I can access the whole world. I've got these tech skills that I can use. So some people are doing well, but a lot of people, you know, it's tough. And at the same time, we're having this incredible spiritual upsurge too. So, you know, global warming, I mean, I don't think you can deny that anymore. I mean, it's easy to put your head in the sand, I suppose, but the effects are, I mean, you can, even in Iowa, we've been having this bizarre weather. It's hotter, the extremes of weather are crazy. So, you know, we're really living in, you know, it's obviously there's change. Exactly what it is, I don't know. I don't have access to that directly. I mean, I do think that's a good way of understanding. Like I said, there's a spirit, there's a quality of each moment. And, you know, like I said, the 60s are a great example. All of a sudden, you know, that spirit flipped, you know, from this totally conservative thing to this, you know, Jimi Hendrix and, you know, and Summer of Love and, you know, all this stuff. Wow. And so where we are now, I have to go by external evidence, you know. But I do think that's a good way to understand reality. Now, evolution, I don't know. That's one of the ways that modern people like to organize reality, you know. And evolution was not a traditional. I mean, the Chinese, they had kind of a, you know, what would happen was that you got this, you'd have chaos, and then a leader would arise, and he'd found a new dynasty, right? And then they would be efficient, and then it would sort of fall apart and get corrupt, and then we'd have chaos again, and it would start over again. So their view of reality was sort of cyclical. Whereas, you know, the West, even though we say we're secular, we've got this sort of Christian view of reality built in, and there's a beginning and an end. There's a creation, and there's a day of judgment. And so even though we're all Western and atheistic or whatever, we still have this sort of tendency to think in terms of, well, okay, there's a beginning and an apocalypse. Like that whole 2012 thing. Boy, there was a lot of publicity about that Mayan thing, and everyone was all excited about it, and of course nothing happened at that level, you know? And so everyone's going to have a day of judgment when you die. Yeah, you're going to be, you know, that's your day of judgment. But whether society is going to totally, you know, an apocalypse, probably not, you know. And so, but that's what, you know, we have these views of reality. That's how we structure things. And so whether it's evolution or not, yes and no. I mean, I don't necessarily see that always in play. I mean, evolution in terms of species, sure, that's going on, right? But whether it's, you know, it seems very like it's a scientific version of the Day of Judgment kind of thing. You know, the way people tend to think, okay, everything's getting better. Is it getting better? I don't know. You know, I think that's part of one of the problems that we're running up against. It's like the economy's not going to be able to grow so everybody can be rich, you know. That, you know, we don't have that. We had a brief kind of, in the America, this empty continent, all these resources, we used them up, and now what? You know, if everyone in China wants, and India wants a car, going to be a problem. You know, if everyone wants to have a U.S. standard of living, you know, 5% of the population in the U.S. uses 25% of the resources of the world. And that obviously can't continue, you know. And so, like I said, we're living in interesting times, but at times it's always the best of times and the worst of times. So I guess I kind of dodged that question. I guess the short answer to that was, I don't know what the spirit is right now, you know.
No.
But that's a really interesting way of looking at reality.
It's hard to actually put a name on the dominating force that controls the zeitgeist. It's interesting to see how it changes. You know, we had one in World War II, a certain spirit of the times in the World War II era, and it sort of evolved into that 60s movement and some of the nice things that happened before then, like the establishment of the State of Israel and things like that. So, but I'd look at the 60s movement and the spirit ruling over that time, and I'm saying, wow, the same person who was, you know, smoking marijuana in a field at Woodstock is now this Capricornian creature sitting in Capitol Hill, and with the stroke of a pen is, you know, sending drones someplace. You know, so I'm not sure how the spirit of the late 60s ultimately is going to play out.
Well, what happened was there's a lot of people that just go with the flow, you know, but that you couldn't have had the 60s without there being a significant number of people that, you know, really believed in it and also stuck with it. Because it had a pretty strong impact on the culture, and for good and for evil, you know. It's sort of like, it's interesting how, because I do Zen and I'm in a very traditional lineage, how just people just have this instant knee-jerk negative reaction to any kind of ritual or any kind of formality, you know. And it's, sometimes it's appropriate. I mean, like, you're in court, you don't want the judge to be sitting in a T-shirt scratching his butt. You know what I mean?
It's like, right.
You know what I mean? It's just certain times and formalities appropriate. And because in court, it's like, let's pay attention. You know, you go in and you got the flags and you got the judge sitting up on the bench and you got the robes on. And it's like a wake-up call. I mean, that's the most useful thing about it. It's like, hey, this is serious. You know, this is no joke. You know, you'll pay attention. And that's, you know, you can get caught up in it and, you know, you can have empty ritual and stuff like that. But, you know, there's actually a purpose to it. And yet the 60s, that was kind of like, oh, throw all that stuff out, you know. And, like, for example, when I was a kid, you called adults Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Brown or whatever. You know, you wouldn't call them by their first name.
Right.
And so the lack of, you know, that's good in a way because, you know, you always be equal. But one of the things I do as a lawyer is land lieutenant, and I was talking to this parent, and she's, like, talking about her kids, and they were running wild. They're renting this apartment and, like, having, you know, smashing it up and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm thinking, you know, I don't have kids, but I'm thinking if I did, I wouldn't let them do that. But I'm kind of a relic. You know, nowadays, really, kids run wild, which is good in some ways. You don't get disciplined. You don't have people getting, you know, spanked and stuff like that. But then there's a loss. So that's the thing, is that's where I come back to evolution. I'm like, something's lost and something's gained. It's not like everything's getting better and better and better. The further we go in the future, it gets better, and the more we went in the past, the worse it was, you know? But that's how we tend to structure things. And we tend to think, oh, we're so advanced. It's like, yeah, we got, I mean, most people, I mean, I can't, I mean, computers I can barely handle, like, switching to Windows 7, you know? But, like, I don't understand how to make a computer, you know? So how much credit do I really get for that, you know? And so we think we're really advanced technologically, which, you know, we are and we're not. I mean, it's funny, like, a car is basically the biggest technological change in cars was, you know, the automatic transmission. Now, nowadays, you do have a lot of electronics. They are heavily, you know, that's amazing how cars are used with so much. It's like it's run by the computer. But, you know, technologically, it's still basically that 1900s technology. You know, air conditioning. They invented air conditioning around 1900. They had fax in the 20s. You know, a lot of the stuff, if you look at a jet, again, essentially, other than now they're doing a lot of electronic controls, the technology is the same, you know. And so it's not, you know, in a lot of ways, we're not as advanced as we think we are. So, that's on a tangent. You ask me another question. Let's get riffing again.
Well, that's one thing I like about traditional astrology is that you mentioned earlier there was a split. You know, now people these days look towards the East, towards Buddhism and Hinduism to get what they think is spirituality, and we don't really realize that there's such a similarity between Indian astrology and the medieval astrology. And what interests me is, for example, the contributions of the Arabs to the traditional astrology. Because when I think of Islam and Islamic science, I think of this really sort of conservative and even uptight sort of approach to things. But back in the day, back in the Middle Ages and before the Middle Ages, certainly, in the, you know, 600 AD, right around that range, the Arabs were quite spiritual and they were excellent astrologers. I've always found that to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what happened was that when the Roman Empire fell, you know, in the West, they continued on in Byzantium, you know, in modern-day Turkey. And then a lot of that knowledge of the Greeks and the Romans passed to this advanced Islamic civilization. And people don't realize that, you know, around 800, 900, that the Islamic civilization, which, you know, the caliphate controlled most of the Middle East and, you know, in North Africa and even into Spain, was the most advanced cultural, you know, part of the what. Now the Chinese were doing their thing too, but, you know, much more than the, you're in the Dark Ages basically in Europe. And so about 1200 or 1300, then particularly in Sicily and Spain, which had been under the Islamic domination and was reconquered by the Christians, they got these translation teams together and they started translating all this, you know, this useful material. But what happened basically was that there the astrology basically began in Babylonian Chaldea around, say, 300-400 BC. They had a very advanced, they had very astral-based religion. And so the priests would watch the planets and record the planets. And then they started eventually predicting from that and doing people's horoscopes from that. And that, the Greeks learned about it, the Romans learned about it, and then they kept passing this on. But you need a high technology and a pretty advanced civilization to do the math. The math is very complicated. And it takes a lot. I mean, I use a computer, but doing it by hand is a lot of work. And so, but, you know, the Islam, you know, the modern conservative stuff is only part of Islam. I mean, I had experience with Sufism, which is the mystic side of Islam, when I was in Washington, D.C., and, in fact, was initiated as what's called a darvish, which is an initiate of a Persian or Iranian Sufi order called the Nimatullahi, which means the wealth of Allah. And so that very, you know, very open, very spiritual, you know, not conservative the way we think of the Saudi, that's a particular style, the Wahhabi fundamentalism or the Taliban, is modern, basically. They're fundamentalists. They're the equivalent of a fundamentalist Christian. They're fundamentalist Muslims, and they represent a small part of the Islamic heritage. And so, you know, certainly that was something that I found very interesting about it. Now, what they did was they got Indian astrology, Persian astrology, and also then the Hellenistic, the Greek astrology. In about 800 or 900, these Arab, mostly they were Jewish or Christian, but they're writing in Arabic. They created a new synthesis, and you know, Hoary astrology was something that, you know, that they really developed. It's very complex, very precise, an incredible detail. And when it came to Europe, in fact, the Western traditional astrology is Arabic astrology. If you look at, for example, William Lilly in the back of Christian Astrology, which is a very famous Hoary text, he has a list of all the sources. And 80% of them are Arabic sources written in Arabic. And so our traditional astrology really is Arabic astrology. Now, it's simplified. You know, that's something that people have been translating. There's a guy named Ben Dykes. He's a PhD in philosophy. And he's been translating all these Arabic texts. So finally, I mean, if you couldn't read Arabic, you couldn't read Latin, you wouldn't have been able to have access to it. But all of a sudden, now you can start reading this material and using it. So we're still kind of in the infancy of reviving a lot of this traditional astrology. And you know, again, like I said, it's a very exciting time to be practicing and to be learning about these and have all this stuff available to you. You just go to the, you know, go online and you can order it. You know, it's really great.
Yeah, it's amazing because the techniques from those days are really, really powerful. You do a thriving business, for example, in electional astrology, where people who are wanting to know when the right time would be to start a business or when should I put my home on the market to sell it and things like that. The techniques that you use, these are ancient, time-proven techniques. And much like as a lawyer, you would consult, you know, an accumulated body of legal opinion. And for to establish a precedent for something, but with astrology, that corpus of knowledge is much, much bigger, isn't it?
I think that's a really good analogy because, you know, people say, well, you're an astrologer and attorney, that's so different. I'm like, you know, really not. I'm using my expert knowledge to help, you know, my clients. And, you know, what I like about both of them is just like you said, I mean, there's a great tradition and there's a lot of theory. At the same time, you have a practical situation in front of you. If you're a lawyer and you have a case, you've got to be able to deal with the judge, and you've got to explain it to him, and you've got to be able to deal with it. At the same time, if you don't know the law, you know, you've got nothing to work with. The same thing with astrology. I mean, I've got these books, and I follow the, you know, follow the tradition. At the same time, I've got someone in front of me saying, look, You know, like today someone was asking about a visa. You know, will my relative get a visa? You know? And so I've got to sit down and apply the knowledge and the experience because it's practical. What we're doing is modeling reality, and we're trying to come up with a model of reality that's accurate. Now, what's interesting about it, too, is that judgment comes into play. I mean, you know, you have a situation where with a traditional astrology, I can sit down and sort of mechanically crank through all the different factors in the chart and get about 75% of the information I need. The rest, though, I have to use my intuition and my judgment. Now, I only do within the chart, though. For example, if you're asking about, will I marry this person and their significator is afflicted, then I would say, well, that person's unable, unwilling, or unsuitable for the relationship. Now, which of those it is, I'm going to have to look at the rest of the chart, you know, or use my intuition about what's going on. But it only will be, you know, I'm not sitting down and tuning into the situation like a psychic, you know. And right. At the same time, intuition comes into it. But you can train in it. It's amazing. The more you do of this, the more prediction you do, the better you are at it. You know, and I like for myself to do I Ching, and I get better and better and better at doing it. Though I don't do that professionally, just do it for myself. But the practice at it, the practice of prediction is great. And people can do this themselves. The first thing you got to do, though, stop doubting it. Stop that. You don't have to believe in it automatically, but you got to stop disbelieving in it. And you got to, because in our lives, you know, for example, today it was interesting. I was listening to this music, this song from when I was like in high school. You know, and I just listened to it on YouTube. I don't know why I was listening to it. I just kind of popped up. And then today, like 12 hours later, I'm walking past this store. It's really relatively obscure now, and I'm hearing that same song. You know, and so we tend to think, oh, it's a coincidence. There are no coincidences. In the spiritual view of reality, everything's connected. So that's the first thing you can do is quit doubting that these things have meaning, and then you start just paying attention to it. And I don't even necessarily know what that means as far as that same song, but, you know, you pay attention to those patterns, you pay attention and you're open to it. And you can find, you can do it yourself. I mean, my students, the more they practice at it and once they learn the technique, the better and better they get at it. So that's fun, too. I really do enjoy teaching because there's always a sort of aha moment for people. They'll kind of have trouble putting it together, then all of a sudden, you know, lesson 6 or 7 or something, they're like, oh, yeah, they get it. You know, and then they're able to actually just predict for themselves. That's really kind of exciting.
Well, Mr. Warnock, I can't believe our hour just flew by. We've reached the end of our interview. I really want to thank you for sharing your time and knowledge with us here tonight. I'd like to remind everyone that you can find Chris Warnock at Renaissance Astrology, renaissanceastrology.com, an excellent source of learning and enrichment. Chris, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We'll have you on again sometime, and I hope you have a wonderful evening.
All right, you too.
All right. Well, before we get my co-host to weigh in on this, I would like to make a few announcements. Be sure to stay tuned for the second hour of the show. We are far from done here. You still have an hour to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We'll announce that call-in number later, so have your pen and paper handy. If you couldn't catch last week's show, you'll be happy to learn that you can find a recorded archive link as well as archives of all previous shows on Psychic Access Talk Radio. com under the Archives tab. Never miss your favorite psychic radio show ever again. Please spread the archive links and future show details to your friends and family around the internet. It's our goal to connect with as many of you as possible. So please share that link. Facebook, share it. Tweet it. We need your help in letting the world know the goodness and the light that we have to share. Be sure to visit psychicbloggers.com to learn about everything related to metaphysics and spiritual matters for free. Everything from reincarnation to soulmate seeking to developing your own psychic abilities is there. Psychicbloggers.com. Spread the word. If you need a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to discover more about them. You can choose from a list of some of the most authentically gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and the Psychic Access team because of the high expectations required of each psychic. All the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access, and if you'd like a detailed personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. By the way, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading for traffic that's referred to psychicaccess.com. For more details, visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like the show, invite your friends to join us in the chat room. We want all of you to listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone. So spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Hello, well, Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, what did you think about the interview? It was sort of lofty material, but well worth the effort of keeping up with.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very interested in magic as part of my my hermetic work and my hermetic studies. I find that area absolutely fascinating, and I'd really like to learn as much as possible. I think I may take one of his courses.
He offers a lot in astrological magic. I mean, I can't really stress this enough. This guy is no dabbler. I mean, he's probably one of the world authorities in magic alive today. I mean, I was listening to a lecture by the eminent astrologer Robert Hand, and he mentioned Chris Warnock. This was ages ago, so, you know, he started out right off the bat just really turning heads.
We need to buddy up and do his course.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. The Picatrix, that book that he sort of revived, it's really an interesting book. You should see some of the I hesitate to call them recipes in there. Some of them are quite gruesome.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that, Steve, and I did order it, and when I get back into town, I think it may be at my house.
Oh, you ordered it. Interesting. Yes. Interesting. So he's written a lot of other good books on horary and the lunar mansions and things of that sort. I'm a big fan of horary astrology because, you know, it's got a nice format that I like. You just ask a question and boom, you got a chart and you have your answer right there. You know, it's economical.
It's a great technique. I enjoy using horary astrology as well.
Yeah. What interests me, though, is the cosmology behind all of this, what the people, what the magicians and the metaphysicists of the Middle Ages, you know, how they linked the cosmos to Earth. You know, that's where I think the most benefit comes from studying the old ways.
Yes, I've always found that when it comes to texts, the older metaphysical texts are the best. When you get hold of the material that's from the 19th century, early 20th century, and before, it's some of the best material you can find. And I do absolutely agree with him that spiritually and metaphysically, magically, we've lost an enormous amount of knowledge. We're very divorced from the way the cosmos functions. Obviously, as people that are interested in metaphysics and people that practice metaphysics, we're aware and we're closer than the average person. But as a planet, we are, well, humans are very divorced from the cosmos. There's a big schism between us and the cosmos, and I think it's a big part of our problem.
Yeah, as do I. I think that a lot of people look toward the East for the sort of spirituality that they didn't even know was available to them from Western theology. And, you know, that really is too bad. But it's going the ironic thing here is that all this old stuff is going to seem new again because it's going to be coming out in translations, etc. So that 100 years from now, the state of magic is going to be on a level that might even rival that of science. That's what I'm hoping.
That would be something I'd like to see in my lifetime, for sure.
Well, Maureen, let's move on to Maureen. And what did you think about Mr. Warnock and the idea of choosing the right time to capture, for example, the essence of Venus in a talisman to maybe improve your love?
Well, that was just a little bit over my head at some point. But I mean, I know the talisman.
It's hard stuff. It's hard stuff.
But because you guys are the astrology guys, I think you purposely did that to dumb me up.
I'm just
messing with you. No, but what I do want to address is I was having a hard time following it. Not that I didn't like it, but it was interesting. But there was one thing I do want to address because it was about medieval things. And I started thinking about. Because, you know, I grew up with a father who was a yacht racer, raced sailboats. And it's interesting because I think about the medieval times and Renaissance times. And do you know that the people, you know, the certain occupations like we have now, people were considered either government occupations or military during that time period. And interestingly enough, I hope this is not too off course, but the scholars during that time period were labeled as So they may have been called in the Dark Ages for lack of a scientific output, but they were people that were interested in the world around them, so willing to poke and prob until something broke.
Right.
So like an alchemist was actually a medieval chemist, an astrologer is one of them. They were known as scholars, an astronomer, and a mathematician, philosopher, professor, and so on, even a tutor. But, you know, also, what I found interesting that because of the sail of boats and stuff, and you know, they'd say astronomy, but the Arabics knew about a technique in the very early days they used when they would go out to sail the lands. They used one or two, I don't know if you ever heard this, one or two fingers with a thumb and a little finger on an outstretched arm or an arrow, like held at an arm's length, to sight the horizon at the lower end of the Polaris at the upper. Have you ever heard that?
No,
trippy.
I haven't. That's very cunning.
Yeah, very much so. And it was during that time period, of course. And I heard him talking about Islam. He was talking about what other?
The Sufis.
But he was talking about other peoples. Areas.
We mentioned the Wahhabi sect in Saudi Arabia and the Iranians. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia. So there's the Arabic. I mean, I know they're a little bit different, but the Arabic. But I found it's, you know, cause everybody, I find it interesting, the navigators and everything. But first, I don't know if you've seen any of these tools, but they were downright astrologers. And, you know, that's not just astronomers. And with that, I wonder if you guys could do this if you're going across the world. Anyway, I did find them interesting, and the magic and everything. I think that's it's lovely. But, you know, talking about the Renaissance time, a very interesting time. I was there.
You weren't there.
Yes, I was. I saw you.
Okay. Yeah, I was definitely there. I mean, that was my time period. That's one thing I love about this stuff is that the science back then was spiritual science.
Well, exactly. And the scholars, like I said, were named. The alchemists were like the – they were scholars. They were noted astrologers, astronomers. They were all noted scholars in the medieval times. So the thing of it is, look what's, you know, nowadays, or even, you know, the philosopher or the mathematician, we're all in the same, they're up on the same level. So, you know, there's still hope for you guys. But I'm going to listen to the archives, definitely. I want to hear this more in detail when I do later, definitely.
Yes, the archives are, that's the beautiful thing about them. They're always there waiting for you whenever you need them, the archives
tab.
They're lovely. Well, you know what? Before we get Sadia to chime in here, I'm going to announce the call-in number. That number is 724-444-4851. Again, it's 724-444-4851. We're going to put each call automatically on hold, and we're going to answer the call in the order that we get it. So you'll hear the show to help you relax during the wait. But when you get on the air, we ask you to be very clear and direct with your question. We can only take one question. So we ask you to make it a sharp, focused question in order to get the better answer. So that number again is 724-444-4851. Now, Sadia, I know that you – I don't want to say are familiar with a lot of Eastern philosophies, but doesn't that figure in prominently to your work, or am I mistaken on that?
It does, but not when it comes to astrology. It's not really within my expertise. So I actually, I mean, that's what was so interesting about it is I learned a lot of things that I didn't know But I actually wanted to know, you and Steve are saying a word, it sounds like horary. I was wondering, can you spell it and can you elaborate on what that is? Because I have no idea. And also, if you wouldn't mind saying, you know, what's the difference between traditional and modern astrology? Because I didn't even know that it had transformed at all. So I would love to know more about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the horary comes from the word for hour. And it's essentially where you ask a question. Am I going to get married, or, you know, does so-and-so like me, or does so-and-so love me? Am I going to win this court case? And you cast the chart for the time and place that you ask the question. And the answer is right there in the chart. It's one of the oldest forms of astrology. All the other forms sort of evolved out of it. And it's really the place to begin if you want to learn astrology, is how to interpret horary, because then you become very familiar with the planets actually representing all the various things in the world. And it's a powerful tool for knowing how a situation is going to play out. It's very similar to the tarot. Now, modern astrology is different from the traditional in that modern astrology uses the outer planets of Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto. And it does not use anywhere near the number of actual techniques, for example, for determining when a person is going to marry, how many spouses the person is going to have, and all of those physical, concrete, observable things. All of those techniques were lost, believe it or not, during the age of enlightenment. All those techniques were lost and forgotten until scholars like Christopher Warnock came along, and his teacher, Robert Zoller, came along, dusted off these books that were in Latin and translated them and made the techniques available to the modern world for the first time in hundreds of years. And so this is an advance in astrology that's going to pick up, and it's going to gain a lot of momentum. And it's very similar to the Eastern ways of doing astrology. Very similar.
Thank you for clarifying. I didn't know any of that.
The horary is... It's economical, you know, it's really fast and to the point. You don't have to spend a whole bunch on it. You know, you go in there with one question, boom. It's usually answered within 15 minutes. In the old days, you know, it would take every bit of 15 minutes to get you in and out the door with the answer to your question. So it's very powerful. And it was made powerful by the spirituality of that era of the spiritual understanding. You know, science became more oriented toward empirical, provable things. And it lost the spiritual character that it had, you know. So in a way, we really have gone backwards. You know, we've advanced with material technology, but not in spiritual technology.
Well, I didn't know that any part of astrology, any information had been lost. I had no idea.
Well, lost, not permanently, even though who knows how much of it is permanently lost. I mean, think of like when Rome was, when it fell to the barbarians, okay, we've got an army of unwashed barbarians sacking the world's most civilized city. And, you know, what we're talking about are papers, you know what I'm saying? They probably got burned. You know, a lot of these papers, they just got destroyed. But the Arabs, they actually kept these books, and it was actually, they were translated back from Arabic into Latin, and then from Latin, now some of them finally into English. So we're at the birth of a new era in metaphysics
right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And, you know, a lot of people, they might not understand how old or ancient approaches or techniques might have any bearing on modern problems, but they do. For example, there's a technique to figure out the name of one's holy guardian angel, which is a big time operation in any kind of doing any kind of Western magic, because knowledge of the holy guardian angel is what allows you to sort of bend the stars to your will and maybe sidestep a negative testimony from the stars. You know, so very similar, the Eastern and Western traditions. Very similar, more similar than we might realize. Now, Steve, I would like to hear more about your forays into magic. This is actually quite fascinating to me.
Well, I would say that my experiences with magic began with the law of attraction, or probably more my internal debate about the difference between seeing the future, precognition, and the law of attraction. So I'll explain. I remember when I first moved to Brighton on the south coast of England, I'd started a new job and I was looking for my first home in Brighton, and I got really sick. I think I had a chest infection and flu, and I was off work for a few days. I was really poorly. And when I started to feel better, I started doing a scrapbook of all of the things I would like to have in my new apartment. And I was really specific. I chose the light fittings, the way I wanted the little staircase, the dimensions of the rooms, the faucets, the tiling, everything. Right. And even the carpet. And I remember when I got better, I started looking at properties, and it was really expensive at the time. And all of the properties that I looked at, I just didn't like. And the ones that I would like were far beyond my price range. So I gave up looking for a while, and I carried on scrapbooking and got even more specific, Stephen. And then I remember seeing an advert in the newspaper for a flat. And it didn't give any information, really, and there were no pictures. But I went to see it, and I was outside the building with my friend Sean. And I just looked at Sean and said, "Sean, I think I'm going to buy this flat." And he said, "Yeah, I think you are. This is really strange." And we went in, and we couldn't speak because it had everything in my scrapbook. The same carpet, the same faucets. It was crazy. Even the number of windows, the view, it was unbelievable. And I made an offer, and the realtor came back and said, "Well, actually, that's not the price. It's a lot less. there's been a mistake." And I said, "Well, even the price I thought it was is inappropriate because it's just so underpriced." He said, "Well, it's now even more underpriced." So I had three surveys done, thinking that the roof would, the ceiling and the roof would collapse because it was in an old Regency building, and it all came back as fine. And so for years I thought, well, I saw the future. I saw what was coming. I was tuned into what was coming. And then I began to learn about the law of attraction and thought to myself, well, no, I manifested this apartment. And then I thought, Stephen, well, where's the boundary line between seeing and manifesting?
Would you credit the specific nature of your original vision with helping toward making that dream for property happen? You know, the law of attraction.
Yes and no, Stephen. I think that there is a very blurry line between precognition and manifestation when you're really in tune. And I look back, and my guides told me that property was a gift, and they told me why it was being gifted to me. And I just thought, oh, that seems like nonsense. But years later, I look back, and it absolutely was a gift, and it enabled me to leave the corporate world and do my spiritual work without giving up my home and, you know, really changing my circumstances dramatically in the US. So I believe that, yes, I manifested it on some level. On another level, it was something that Spirit had planned because of the work they wanted me to do. And on another level, I was seeing. And my point is, it's like a prism. They're all interconnected. Right. What Spirit wants, what you want, what you're manifesting, and what you're potentially seeing, if you're seeing into the future, is it all the same thing?
Right. Well, you know what, Steve? We have a call for Sadia from Virginia.
Welcome, Virginia.
Hello. Hi, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Well, I'm not too bad.
How can I help you?
Well, I have a question regarding my marriage. We're going through some problems or whatever. So on my end, I've been doing things to kind of calm the situation down and trying to listen a little more than I speak. And it seems like that my husband keep going in the past. So I just need to know, like, will he ever, he keep digging up all of the past mistakes, you know? And I don't know, like, it feels like he's not moving forward. You understand?
Certainly. So let me start by getting your first name and date of birth. It just helps me to tune in.
Okay, it's Lakevia. Date of birth is 8/15/81.
Can I get his first name and date of birth?
McCully, 10/9/82.
So basically what's happening is you're trying to move forward and fix things and make changes within yourself, and he's just stuck in the past and bringing up past things that upset him about you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like, I feel like this happened in his childhood. Can you tell me about his siblings?
Well, he comes from a big family, and he's from the Virgin Islands. His sister, they're like a family. Well, they're not, they're a little close, but not too much, you know. And it's like, they seem like they're type of people that holds on to a lot of stuff, you know, because the way I was raised, I let stuff go, you know. You can't change it. You move forward, forgive and forget, you know. But it seems like it's the hardest thing to do, and that's what's hurting our marriage. You understand? Because he keeps going into the past 6-7 years, and who can answer to a past mistake? Nobody can, you know. So I fear that this is going to be.
That's what I'm feeling, is that I can hear his siblings bickering. And what I'm hearing is exactly what you're describing, and also teasing, like making fun of each other's looks and hair and noses and things like, as a matter of fact, I'm actually getting pictures of Michael Jackson. I think that's how my brain works. Like siblings that go at each other and are kind of mean. And also, it's like, you know, if you went to the bathroom in your pants when you're 2, when you're 15, they're still going to remind you about it. And so, unfortunately, that means this is really embedded in his psyche. I mean, this is how he's taught to interact with people. I feel like his parents had something to do with it, and his siblings as well. And it's just so ingrained in him. I really feel like he's going to need to get some therapy, and I know he's going to be really resistant to that. But I'll be honest with you, I don't see him being, he's not like you. I don't see him moving past this without some guidance and some help from somebody else. And because you represent now you're his mother and you're his sister and you're his brother, you're all the people that he's irritated with or that he has hostility toward, and he can't see you as you. He's going to keep projecting that stuff onto you. Unfortunately, I really feel like he needs somebody to help him through this. My suggestion is to suggest that you both go see one, because I never suggest that somebody says you need help or you need therapy, because then you're never going to get a great response.
Right.
But saying, I love you and I just want this to work out. I know I have some issues. You're obviously, there's some things I've done that have upset you. Would you be willing to go with me?
Right.
And it's not like you're saying there's. That's what I'm hearing. I'll tell you, I think he's going to be resistant, but I also feel like if you can get him in there, I think this guy wants to talk. I think he has a lot of wounds and hurts, and there was a lot of mean things said to him as a kid. I think he wants somebody to talk to about it.
Yeah, but how do I open it up? Because as you see, it's hard trying to even have a conversation with him because he's just so stuck in the past. I'm just like, you have to let that go. Like, you got to move on to bigger things. Like, now is, you know, what we need to discuss. You understand? It's like, I don't know how to answer when I'm growing up as well as I was a child then, I'm a woman now. You know, we all make mistakes. And it's just like, it's kind of tiring, you know. So I am going to suggest we do attend counseling. And however, hopefully somebody will be able to pull that out of him and help him move forward. You understand?
I do. And I'd like to repeat, To be really careful not to say anything to him, like, you know, you need to stay out of the past, you dwell on this, you, because he's already defensive. So I just want to reiterate that I think the best approach is to say, listen, obviously I've hurt you and you're having a hard time letting go of it. I know I've made some mistakes. We need to work through this together. So it's more like me and we rather than you, because unfortunately, I don't think he's going to hear you. He's just going to automatically, it's like shutting off a light switch. There's no reason to even do it. So that's my suggestion, is make it about we and me and not him, just to get him in the door. And then when you get him in the door, you can do whatever you want. But I don't think you're going to get him in the door until you, you know, you start speaking in those terms.
Right. So I've been working on my words. I'm working on myself as well, because I've been trying to just, like, you know, think before I say anything, because I know it's going to be real fragile with him. So I've just been just like more trying to be submissive as a wife. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to work on myself. And then I'm not going to talk about it whenever he do go in the past. I'm just like, okay, you know, I don't go with him. You understand? So I just try to just let him say whatever and then just let it go. So I'm going to definitely watch the things I say and how I put it, point fingers towards him, and just try to let him know I'm in it with him as well, to help him move forward from his childhood up until now. So I can do that.
Sounds great, Lativia. I really do. And I wish you absolutely the best. And I really appreciate you checking in with us and calling. And I hope that I was able to help you.
You were. Thank you so much. And you enjoy the rest of your day as well. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Sadia. If you would like a reading from Sadia, you can find her at psychicaccess.com. Maureen, are you there? I wanted to get your opinion about the law of attraction that I was talking about with Steve. You're an expert of that law, being very attractive and attracting all these wonderful things.
Well, I know how to attract a lot of negative things, so I know that it does. Honestly, I'm not kidding you, and go figure. I'm serious. And so how can I say it doesn't work? Because I do know that I have attracted negative things when my mind gets set on throwing it out there. Right. I'm very honest, you guys. Hear me roar. Because I absolutely know that this happens. I absolutely know that it happens with our health, too, when you put out negative energy in your health. And I'm walking exam. All I know is what I know. I don't believe it, but it has happened to me personally. But if you do put out, it's funny because in the past, I don't know, a few months, I'm an insomniac, and I was doing a lot of great meditations, guided meditations to get me to sleep, and I just pass out on stuff that has to do with not about acquiring a bunch of money, but having an outlook of making my own luck or whatever you want, or bringing good things to me. And so I'd fall asleep, but it still was getting this, you know, it in my ear. And also there's some sound different tones that were going on. And I'll tell you something, whether I imagine up, but suddenly, bam, I got a new computer. Suddenly I got, bam, a new car. I do feel definitely that, you know, I did a show with Michael Loyster, I don't remember, back last year. And he's the guy he teaches people how to run workshops. So he teaches them his system. He's pretty well known, but it's about deliberate law of attraction, which I really like. Deliberate law of attraction. Yeah. You need to have a deliberate situation. You write down what you deliberately need to do. Some people don't look at it that way. Deliberating it is really important. And so I'm all for law of attraction, because, like I said, I've brought in a lot of negative. I don't know how you feel about that, but I have.
I just need to focus on better.
Yeah, you know, when you get down and everything, it's like, wow. It's like, I must be pretty powerful on that. We all have our own personal power on that. But I feel very strongly about it. I don't believe it. I just know it is what it is.
Amen. Yes, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I would like to just go ahead and repeat the call-in number. It's 724-444-4851. 724-444-4851. Just wanted to get that out there one more time. Well, Sadia, I wanted to ask you, we talked briefly in the interview a bit about remedial measures for
correcting and making prescriptions. And we talked about how a lot of maybe a lot of modern spiritual outlets and spiritual practices, they don't have this remedial prescriptive sort of attitude. What is there anything in your practice? How do you, for example, remedy problems that people present to you with? What are some of your more popular prescriptive methods?
Well, you know, honestly, it's not even really me. I actually try to stay out of it, because then I'm going to bring my own garbage and my own ego and my own life experience. So I just listen and just kind of interpret. But I actually would love to talk more about law of attraction, because I have a different philosophy than most people do.
Ooh, let's hear it.
And I'm writing a book, and there's a whole chapter on this. Well, so in Kundalini Yoga, which I teach, we have the positive mind, the negative mind, and the neutral mind.
Right.
If you're in the positive mind, you're always going to be disappointed. And you're also going to miss warning signs, because we live on planet Earth. There's dangers. There are people who are con artists and scammers, and they're, don't have our best intentions in mind. And if you live in the negative mind, then you miss all the beauty and all the miracles, and it can impact your health and also make you attract negative people. But the neutral mind is where you see things the way they are. And you just accept. It's not good. It's not bad. It's experience. And somehow you need to use this to learn and change and grow and to become more compassionate. And somehow, somewhere, hopefully in this lifetime, use it to help other people. But the problem that I have with law of attraction, it's not so much that I don't believe in it, because I do believe it. I'm a pretty good manifester. But I can tell you that when I manifest something I'm not supposed to have, I get it and it disappears. It's like poof. It's an illusion. It's an illusion, because I also believe in destiny, and I believe that we have a life contract. And so if our life contract is to live in poverty, we can, want to win the lottery all we want, and we can keep trying. We keep trying. But the problem is that it's either not going to happen, or it's going to come and happen and self-destruct. We'll wind up losing it. And the also problem that I have with law of attraction as a kind of blanket philosophy is that means everybody suffering on the planet created that. And I'm all about compassion. So I struggle with that. Like every starving child or poor child, somehow they're negative. And all the rich kids, they're positive. It just completely goes off the complete opposite of idea of my philosophy in life.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I also believe that in general, older souls have more difficult lives. They just do. They can take more on. They're stronger. They can take more experience on. They can take things on that are going to make them more compassionate and evolve later on. And newer souls have to have kind of more of an easier life. They're more fragile. They haven't developed the strength and the resiliency to get through difficult situations. So that's my spiel about law of attraction.
That's very interesting. Western theology sort of echoes your view there. There's a verse in Proverbs that says, "God loves the person that He punishes." So that sort of jives with what you were saying about the old soul having more karmic responsibilities, perhaps taking on a lot more of that collective karma. That we've all sort of generated as a civilization, so that's a very interesting concept. I just want to go ahead.
Think about like Jesus, Dalai Lama, right. Gandhi, right. Mandela. I mean, those people didn't have, they weren't living in great wealth, and they didn't want to.
No, they weren't. They all had fairly difficult lives.
Very difficult lives. And they were really positive people. They were really, people who just came here to teach love and compassion. And Martin Luther King, the people that I admire have had really rough times here. And, we have to acknowledge too that anybody that comes here to teach love doesn't usually work out real well for them. That, if everybody that did something good for someone or taught love got $1 million, then everybody would do it. But the motivation is the wrong motivation. And it's all about motivation. It's where your heart is. It's not about, if I do something good, then something good is going to happen to me. It's got to be, I'm just doing something good because I'm a human being and so is this person.
Yeah, there's something about doing good that it asks you to do it for its own sake. without hope for reward. You know, you do good just for its own sake. I read a book where a philosopher said that this differentiates it from evil. He brought up the idea that people can't create evil or commit evil deeds just for the sake of doing evil. They are always hoping to get something out of it. And good is differentiated from that because we do good just for no reason other than to do good. And I think it's a natural human behavior, believe it or not.
But you do good despite the fact that often, you know, negative things happen to us for doing good.
Amen to that.
You know, I just want to interact, and I love, Sadia, that you brought this up because it's fantastic. Because in a lot of ways, when we do good, we do feel better. Well, some of us may not. I do. But I like how you put what you just put out there, Sadia. Exactly. I concur. I mean, you're right on that. But, you know, the thing of it is, so that's why, you know, maybe the negativity comes back is because I'm like such an old soul. But you talk about motivation. I was never motivated to go into my work to make a living. And it's been difficult for me. I've been struggling with that, with my mindset on that, because the motivation wasn't because of that. And somebody asked me one time, how much do you charge? Well, that person charges more. You must not be as good.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
And I go, my motivation was not for money, you know, doing this for money. My motivation was pure caring heart.
Yeah, it's something you're called to do, you know.
No one called me to torment.
No one called you?
I wish I had a nice call. Hey, come on in. No, it was like a struggle for me. But I like your view, and absolutely. I'm sorry to interrupt. I needed to jump on in that one.
I'm glad you did. Yeah, that's
fine. I'm glad
fun.
I did. Yeah.
Thank you, Maureen.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to mention the call-in number again in case anybody forgot to jot it down the last time. It's 724-444-4851. Again, 724-444-4851. Well, Steve, I wanted to ask you real fast, what do you think about using astrology for remedial purposes, for prescriptive purposes, for saying, okay, well, the problem here is that you have an excess of this and a deficit of that, and so here's how we're going to correct it.
I use that a lot, but when it comes to health, I always advise people that they should do what I do, which is gather information from all sources and take advice from different sources, and also see conventional doctors. So I believe that absolutely a metaphysical prescription, as it were, understanding one's profile or understanding the discordant progressions and energies that need to be counteracted, that's very, very valuable. And understanding how to do that with herbs, with different remedies, even crystals, thought patterns, etc., it's very, very valuable. But I do that in addition to the traditional healing and medicine.
I'll tell you what really electrified me is all of this stuff about the lunar mansions. That is absolute spiritual dynamite right there. The lunar mansions, which the Vedic astrologers, they use this to a degree. They call it the nakshatra system, but it's really, really, it allows quite a deep level of investigation into just about anything. This is just one example of how different spiritual techniques from ancient times are coming alive today. You know, not a lot of astrologers, they don't use the lunar mansions in their work because they don't know about the lunar mansions yet. But pretty soon they will, and it'll be a big deal. All I can say is that I'm just absolutely grateful to be living in a modern age where we have scholars and we have a society that's open-minded enough about things like magic and spirituality to permit some of these things to even happen. Have you ever gotten a talisman or anything like that, Steve?
I haven't. No, I haven't ever had a talisman.
Nor have I.
I would like to.
I mean, the idea intrigues me. You know, the idea being that if, you know, you choose the right moment to make it, then it'll be invested with the sort of the archetypal power of that planet. You know, just a little something extra to sort of nudge you in the right direction.
Yes, I do believe that understanding oneself through metaphysics is massively valuable. I've seen that I've been able to change outcomes by understanding myself better, working on myself and changing my way of thinking, etc., my expectations. And I loved what Satya said as well about money, that I feel incredibly wealthy. Sometimes I can't pay my bills, but I feel incredibly wealthy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not so much the money, it's doing something that you love and that it's useful for you to do, where you get to help a lot of people doing it. That's really the important thing, I would imagine.
Yeah, I remember Zane said, Stephen, that the only currency in spirit is constructive service.
Oh, constructive service. I like that qualifier, constructive, because it makes me immediately say, is there a destructive service? And yeah, if I try to serve humanity arrogantly or from a position that sort of slyly tries to, you know, make myself look bigger or better, then it's not really a service at all. It's not really constructive, is it?
No.
Yeah. That's one thing that impresses me about magic, is that there's a very low threshold of tolerance for any sort of hostile or combative thinking. Even though aggressive sort of magic exists, most people who practice it seriously have nothing but disdain for people who want to make a bad use out of it. You know, so that's another good thing. The spiritual orientation toward these spiritual technologies is very, very much positive and inclined toward helping people tangibly, and it does that very well. However, I have never tried magic myself. Steve, do you have like a ritual that you do, or is that another part of it that you're, you know, trying to explore, the ritual aspect of it?
Well, I believe that the ritual can be helpful, but I don't believe that I need to necessarily engage in any particular ritual in order to make something occur. And I believe that the more we purify ourselves spiritually, the more ability we're given to create change or create circumstances in the world. But I believe the moment we abuse that, our abilities are notched down several levels. So I honestly, Stephen, have found and believe that my spiritual development is the key. That said, I'm not averse to ritual. I don't have a problem with it. I've just never found it necessary. Other than, I mean, meditating, if you call meditating a ritual, or if you call doing yoga and visualizing things a ritual, or if you say that reflecting and creating objectives and all of that is a ritual, then I guess I do. It depends what kind of ritual one's referring to.
I would consider those things ritual, especially if you did them habitually or semi-habitually.
Yeah, well, then I'm very ritualistic, I guess, because I do take time out every day to reflect, to meditate, and I have planning day once a month, etc.
Well, every weekend, billions of Christians, Jews, and Muslims go to their respective places of worship, and they do rituals, to my thinking. Would you say that they're doing a sort of magic?
Yes, I would. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting, very interesting. Well, I tell you what, that actually will bring us to the close of yet another wonderful show. Who is doing the show next week?
Well, Marie? I guess your mind is... Yes, I did mention that. Liam, Leomond. It's okay, I mess with you.
All this meeting, you got a plan for us next week, Maureen.
Yes, I have planned. I'm very excited. The topic is called The Essential Leomond, and it's with Raina George, and she's fantastic. She just wrote a book. And if no one knows about this, I'll tell you something. This is going to be quite interesting because this has to do with from a woman back in 150 years ago during the late 1700s who was a French professional fortune teller. Her name was Leomond, and she came up with 36 cards, and she was very well known working with Napoleon, and so the story goes. That's how, I'm not sure if that's a fact, but that's what I learned. But anyway, so Raina George just released a book, and it's fantastic. I'm going to check into it. I use tarot with this 36 card, the Leomond, and it's becoming quite popular in the U.S. I don't know, Steve, you may have heard of it, the Leomond. Have you ever heard of the Leomond?
I haven't, but I heard when you mentioned Napoleon, were you talking about Madame Lenormand?
I guess you would say I'm not French, but we call it the Leomond. Exactly.
Oh, well, yes.
Yes, then, you know,
the lady that used to read for Napoleon.
Napoleon, and she claimed to have read for a lot of famous people.
Yes.
And, and the future Empress of France with Napoleon and so on. Well, she created, she developed 36 cards with images on each card, and so the cards reflect, so the Leomond, this is what I don't say it properly like you, but us Americans, reflects tangible meanings opposed to the tarot, which has many meanings. So this will be a fantastic show, I know, for the tarot people, and not only that, for me as well, because she's going to talk about how we can use them together, and you can use regular playing cards. So it would be quite interesting. And she's gotten a really great review from, or even a acclaimed from Mary Greer, who we had on recently. Mary Greer is very well known, and she's she's gotten praise saying that, you know, she really, Raina George really has it going on. So it'll be quite interesting. It'll be a great show. So please come and join us.
Ooh, that's going to be really interesting. I'm a tarot person, and I can't wait. I've never heard of this deck, by the way, so I'm going to be really excited about it.
I think so.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Maureen. Can't wait for that show. And thank you very much out there listening. We appreciate you coming into the chat room and listening at home. Big thanks to Doug C., who works behind the scenes to make the rest of us look good. Thank you, Doug. Also, a big thank you to Maureen and Sadia and Steve for adding their special light and magic to the mix tonight. And thanks to you, again, the faithful listeners. So good night, everyone. From all of us to all of you, we wish you prosperity, health, and happiness. See you next week.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.